Shed.
Hello and welcome to door 8 of the Cosmic Shed Advent Calendar. Now, I don't know about you, but at this time of year, I find myself wanting to watch a bit of Star Wars. Let's open the door.
My name is Morten Bay. I'm a research fellow at the Center for the Digital Future at USC Annenberg in Los Angeles. Currently, I'm doing research into new media formats and the social implications of them. And I've been studying social media in general for about 13 years now.
And you came to my attention because all over my Twitter timeline was people saying, hey, turns out the Last Jedi negative stuff was fueled by Russian bots.
Yeah. The reason why I intruded on your Twitter timeline like that is because I did a study of The Last Jedi back in the summer while I was waiting on notes for my PhD dissertation, where I looked at some of the Twitter activity that was going on Rian Johnson's Twitter account. Unfortunately, there's been a lot of misunderstanding about what the study is really about. First of all, you know, there's no mention of Russian bots whatsoever in the study. There's some mention of Russian trolls, which is a little bit different. Bots are automated software robots, and trolls are real human beings. Just in both cases, they seem to want to wreak havoc on discussions on social media, but one is human, one is not. And second, what was really important, or more important, was that the Russian troll finding was actually just a small finding in the study compared to the main finding, which is that political activists in general, human political activists, most of them from America actually, were using the discussion around The Last Jedi to try and make some political points on things that were not related to Star Wars whatsoever. And among those people, there were about 16 out of 967 that met the criteria for Russian trolls. I almost did it myself there. That doesn't mean that they are 100% certain that it's Russian, that they are Russian trolls. It just means that they meet a certain set of criteria. The thing is that the political landscape in America right now is very polarized, right? So one of the things that the Russian influence campaign in 2016 that likely got us the president that we now have, one of the things that they did was just to simply sow as much discord as they could and really split all kinds of communities. Fan communities are these very interesting collectives of people that coalesce around a certain thing. There's not a lot of other discussions that go on. Usually these fan communities are communities because they are gathered around this one certain thing that everybody loves. And then, so they're very coherent in that sense. And then they have internal discussions about that thing. But if you can get in there and start spreading disharmonious messages that will sort of take people into even more into their own camps and create a further split and polarization, bigger polarization, what you're able to do is basically create an environment where you can insert the political message that you want out there. And that's what the Russians did in the election in 2016. And that's what I've found that these political activists have done in the Star Wars community as well, in this particular instance. Now, again, most of the activists that were doing this were American. One of my favorite examples is this NRA activist, this gun rights activist, who starts talking about Rian Johnson being a gun grabber, which is sort of a derogatory term for people that want to take our guns away. He used The Last Jedi, like he had some off-handed remark, really sort of just very brief remark about the writing in Last Jedi, and then he used that as a jumping off point to make a point about gun rights. So it's so that's an example of how that the whole discussion sort of became politicized, and I found that to be very interesting.
Yeah, it's really very interesting. I mean, just to go back, so what are the criteria of what would be a Russian activist? How do you kind of define that?
The 16 accounts that I looked at and that met the criteria for Russian activists, the criteria are basically given by three papers that I cite in my paper that looked at all the social media traffic that was there in 2016 and kind of drew out the criteria that made those social media accounts different from other social media accounts that were doing the same thing. What time of day that the tweets land? Because it's usually, this is something that they've since learned to circumvent. But in 2016, a lot of you could see that a lot of the Russian activity came at a certain time of day when it was during the working day in Russia. The way they are connected to other accounts, if you draw like a network map, you can kind of see which accounts are hubs for Russian troll activity. The three main languages that Russian trolls use are English, German, and Russian. Obviously Russian, but the funny thing is, you would be able to see these accounts that, you know, posted in German for a number of years and maybe then went silent and then started posting in English all of a sudden. And the whole thing about being dormant for a while and then becoming active all of a sudden, that's another giveaway for Russian activity. There are certain methods that the Russian trolls use to figure out a good handle, a Twitter handle. And so there's a bunch of like criteria like that play into it.
Kelly Marie Tran has been forced off social media by trolls, essentially by people attacking her because of the role that she plays. Maybe not even because of the role. Maybe it's because of the way she looks. Maybe it's because of they're told to. But how does what you've discovered play into that narrative?
Those are two, I would say that those are kind of two different parallel developments, I would call them. Kelly Marie Tran, that what happened to her happened mostly on Instagram. That's not something I've studied a lot. But a lot of my colleagues that look at fandom, what they found is that was very much a case of sort of hidden racism and hidden sexism. Now, I saw a lot of that too in my study, but I didn't count that as politicized unless it was very clear that it was a political stance, like an anti-feminist or a movement, rather than just somebody being, you know, just acting sexist or racist, which, you know, a lot of people do because they might not know better, or they're just being jerks. But there were also some that where it was more overtly anti-feminist as a more of a political stance. Like, there were a lot of people that I looked at described The Last Jedi as a radical feminist movie, and that it was like Kathleen Kennedy's personal feminist mission or something. And in that, you could sometimes see language that was very overtly political, and that would be categorized in my study as a political activist rather than just a fan who happened to be sexist and racist.
Well, it's something that I've always struggled with. I've not always struggled with it, to be honest. I've just found it kind of odd that people who are of that persuasion, for the sake of argument, right-wing persuasion, far right-wing or whatever it is, can enjoy Star Wars at all. I mean, it just looks to me like the narrative of, maybe I see it incorrectly, but it looks to me like the narrative of Star Wars is quite clearly not a right-wing narrative. And my understanding of it is that in the first place, George Lucas was saying it was a metaphor for the Vietnam War, right? And the Empire was America. To have enjoyed Star Wars throughout your life and then become an adult who's right-wing and suddenly become cross with the new stuff just doesn't make any sense.
It's something that I discuss a little bit in the paper, and it is, and I find it just as interesting as you do. There's like two things going on there. First of all, I think that there's a lot of people have become emboldened by social media in general, but also the Trump era. Social media platforms, I should say, have given people a very large megaphone and the ability to amplify whatever they say in a very big way. And I think that has given people the fact that there's this sort of semi-anonymity and means that you can basically say anything and get away with it on social media. So people are behaving, they're not being on their best behavior necessarily and on social media. And so they can say things that are just completely outrageous. And I think the Trump era has helped that too. So those people that would normally, maybe because of social norms, keep their most extreme opinions to themselves are now just like flaunting them, right? If you harbor those opinions and you go see Star Wars and you're actually a little disappointed because it doesn't match your current life status anymore, then maybe you get frustrated and you want to vent, and then it happens through these kind of extreme utterances. So that's one thing. I do think, though, there's also, because you're absolutely right, George Lucas has said that the Empire was a metaphor for the big sort of capitalistic techno-empire that America was in the 70s. Well, still is, but what it represented. But even that, I mean, like Pablo Hidalgo said at one point, I mean, this is a movie franchise made by San Francisco liberals, you know? It's like, what did you expect? I think it's really a question of they watched this when they were kids and didn't really think about it as a political thing. And then they grow up, and while there's not much Star Wars around, and then all of a sudden you get a film that very vehemently stresses the values that Star Wars stands for, and they're like, no, I didn't go to the movies to get a political message. I just wanted to watch some Star Wars. I was like, well, maybe you should go back and revisit what actually was in the movies before then.
Yeah.
It's like that 8 or 9 year gap we had between Revenge of the Sith and The Force Awakens. You know, I think a lot of people became adults in that period. And some of them obviously also took on right-wing opinions, and all of a sudden they found themselves at odds with what they loved as children.
Yeah, I can understand how that would make them cross, right? You know, they probably love it just as much as I did as a kid, and now it's been taken away from them. They believe it's been taken away from them. It was just never with them in the first place, really.
This is not going to go the way you think.
So, you're a fan, right?
I would say so, yeah. To the point where I have Star Wars tattoos, so I guess that's...
Oh, really?
that's I guess that's probably safe to say.
Okay, what have you got?
I think that what I get out of Star Wars the most is that it's kind of a metaphor for Taoist principles in a modern technological era. So how does, like, classic values of Eastern philosophy survive in an era where commerce and technology are very, very dominant? That's one of the things that I always got out of Star Wars, is the whole Eastern religion thing. So I have three circles on my left arm, and one of them is the Imperial insignia. The second one is the Rebel insignia, and then the third one is sort of a proto yin and yang symbol. It's like the original yin and yang from the 1300s.
Can you do us a favor? Please feel free to say no, but can you send us a picture that has your face and also that tattoo in it, and then we'll put that on the website? Cool.
Let me shower. Okay.
Yeah. I don't want to see you dirty. You fan of The Last Jedi? Did you enjoy the film?
Yes, I did, and one of the reason why is that it goes back to those Taoist roots in a big way. I feel like it's a real exploration of what Star Wars was really about, the spiritual aspect of Star Wars, if you will. I feel like there's a lot of that in there, and I think to be honest, I was already a fan of Rian Johnson's films. I thought he was, when I saw Brick the first time, I was completely blown away, and I really liked Looper as well. And since seen the Brothers Bloom, I think it's really good. So I was a fan of his already, you know. So when it was announced that he was going to make second one in this trilogy, I was overjoyed, and I don't think he disappointed at all.
It's incredible watching the other films now, going back and seeing Force Awakens. I watched New Hope recently again, and the way that The Last Jedi has kind of enriched those films is a beautiful thing, you know. And I didn't see it first time. I loved it when I saw it the first time, but I didn't realize, obviously you wouldn't, right? But I didn't realize that it was going to, when I then watched The Force Awakens, it was going to make that film better, and it was going to make A New Hope better. And I'm sure that's true of all of them, apart from the ones that I don't like, right? And
that's, one of the things that I really think is interesting about The Last Jedi too, you know, I've seen, I mean, obviously it's a very divisive film because Rian Johnson was tasked with building upon something that was already very popular, of course, but also taking it in a new direction. If you think about long-term strategy for Lucasfilm, these three movies, the last part of the 9 movie cycle, is where they both have to end one story, but then they also have to lay the groundwork for all future Star Wars stories. So unless they wanted to kill the franchise, like you know, by they kind of have to like expand something and sow the roots of the next whatever TV shows might come out of it, whatever films might come out of it later. And so it had to like push forward while at the same time bring closure. What's so interesting is that he kind of does that in the sense that he also renews the visual language. First Star Wars films, especially the first trilogy, was very inspired by like these old serials. So it had like visually a very conservative classic look, right? The old wipes that they were using and sort of, what The Last Jedi does is it sort of subtly starts putting in more modern shots. I remember the one shot where Rey is training at one point. She's shot from below, and it's like it's done with this effect that's kind of a little like a strobe photography kind of thing. That's just something we've never seen in Star Wars before. We've never seen flashbacks in Star Wars before either. Just a lot of like new things that he added to the film language of Star Wars. That was just phenomenal.
Yeah. No, it's a brilliant piece of filmmaking, I think, I think it's a shame. What your piece of research is fascinating, right? And from a political point of view, it's kind of really fascinating and worrying. From a Star Wars point of view, it's really disappointing because this kind of negative feedback, I believe, was probably fed into at least a part of their decision to, you know, hold back on doing the spin-off things.
I'm sure that the negative press attention that came out of all the hubbub about The Last Jedi didn't help. But I think that, you know, Disney's shot themselves in the foot in a very big way when they insisted on bringing out Solo in May. That was a mistake that cost them a lot of money. And I think it's more... I think that the reason why some of these spin-off films have been canceled, if they even existed for real, which we don't really know, but if there was any cancellations, like the Boba Fett film that some people were talking about, I think it's more related to Disney realizing and Lucasfilm realizing that there is actually a limit to how much Star Wars you can put out there. The Marvel films have a different kind of appeal, and that Star Wars is not the same. I'm sure that, like, if you think about it, it's about the time right now where Solo would have come out if they'd chosen the one film a year strategy. I can feel, you know, I would be really excited and hungry for a Star Wars film right now. But in May, even I, as a big fan, I was like, oh, okay, already? I felt like it was a little too soon. And I wasn't really done digesting The Last Jedi yet. And that has more to do with it, really.
Yeah, okay. I'll take that. That's a good point. Well made. What do you think of Solo?
I thought it was fun. It was uncommittal somehow. It was like I just liked the freedom of it, you know, that it wasn't trying to be anything sort of big and it wasn't something that was like trying to push the canon forward or something like that. It was just a fun film. And I think it succeeded at that level. Now, unfortunately, it succeeded at that level by having to be shot twice almost. So it just became insanely expensive. And so, yeah, big financial failure, but I think it's a fun little film.
Yeah, no, it is fun. But, and you're right, if it was coming out now, I reckon it'd be pretty huge. It's a perfect Christmas blockbuster thing, right? That would have been really awesome. Why does this matter? Why does it matter if people use Star Wars to further a political agenda?
This is what the social sciences when we do studies like that call the so what. It's the question that's always asked when we make a finding. It's like, okay, so why does this matter, right? So what? And to me, it's very important because it's an indication that this isn't just happening in Star Wars, but it's happening across fan communities, not just in film and TV, but like music and sports and all kinds of cultural and pop cultural fandoms. It raises a discussion of whether we use fandom communities as places of refuge where we can sort of be free of sort of have an escape from this sort of dour reality that we're living in. And if that's not the case anymore, you know, should we accept that? should we just accept that fans also, I mean, obviously everybody has a political opinion, and fans do too, but should we accept that that kind of separation is now gone? Or should we talk about having fandoms as these places that are free of political manipulation? That's one thing. And the second thing I think is really important is that I've just submitted another study also related to Star Wars, but I can't really talk about it because it hasn't been peer reviewed yet. That shows that this is a right wing phenomenon. That it's basically something that mostly happens on the right, and that the right has a machine system, whatever you want to call it, that really works well for them on social media, especially because they're able to do what they did with The Last Jedi. But, you know, again, we see it in sports, we see it in music, we see it in other places too. But, you know, Star Wars is my fandom, so that's why I studied that. But in general, we are seeing that kind of manipulation of fandoms for political agenda. And I just, it's a problematic approach to trying to make a persuasion attempt in a political democracy. We should keep some things separate, I think.
Thank you so much for joining us. And yeah, I just find it astonishing. I find it really, really weird, the world that we live in right now. I'm just pleased that they're still making wonderful Star Wars films for the rest of us to enjoy without politics getting in the way.
I think I very heartily agree with that.
Thank you so much to Morten Bay for that. That really makes me want to watch The Last Jedi again. Morten did tell me what was in that paper that's not peer-reviewed yet. When that does get published, it's safe to say that there'll be a little bit of a Twitter storm about that and a certain amount of media, and Morten's going to join us here on The Cosmic Shed, I hope, to talk about that. Just looking at the paper that Morten did on The Last Jedi, he analysed over 960 accounts which had tweeted at Rian Johnson. He found that 21.9% of them, just over a fifth, expressed a negative opinion of the film. And once he'd stripped out the trolls and those people with clear political agendas, that dropped to 10.5%. Real fan hostility to the film is actually far less than had previously been reported in the press.
I need someone to show me my place in all this.
The Cosmic Shed.
Science fact.
Science fiction.
And everything in between.